Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is Good Humans Podcast with me, Cooper Chapman, chatting to the world's best about the inspiring stories that got them to where they are today. Hello, all of you good humans, and happy New Year's. Welcome to 2022 Good Humans Podcast. My name's Cooper Chapman. I'm absolutely thrilled to be back recording and excited for a big year ahead. 2022 is going to be a whole year of new goal kicking, lots of time with friends and family, lots of podcasts, lots of mental health workshops for me, and yeah, hopefully lots of good times to continue this amazing thing we call life. Big thank you to everyone who's tuned into the pod. It's been really cool for me to change back over to producing, editing myself. A little bit different than old Good Humans used to be, and it's been so, so well received. So a big thank you to everyone who's listened. A big thank you to everyone who's shared it with their friends. It means the absolute world to me because I know how much these conversations mean to me, and it's really cool to know that these conversations are having a positive impact on lots of you amazing people out there. All right, on to today's episode. This female, beautiful, beautiful girl is one of the most inspiring girls I've ever spoken to be honest. She has a story unlike any other. She has been through the absolute ringer. She's had the most incredibly difficult upbringing I've ever heard about. And the way that she's come through the other side and has this unbelievable mindset, this unbelievable zest for life. And yeah, I'm really, really proud and happy to have had this amazing conversation with her. So I'm going to jump straight into this chat. Welcome to Good Humans Podcast. Taylor Clement, how are you going?
Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, I'm doing really good. Thank you. How are you?
I'm very well. It's nice to be kicking off the year with first podcast of the year, getting to have a chat to you. We did speak on the phone a little bit earlier today, actually, to go over a couple of things about how we can connect and how we can get you involved with the Good Human Factory. And first step was to get you on Good Humans Podcast to learn a little bit more about your story because it inspires the hell out of me. And yeah, I'm looking forward to letting our listeners hear all the amazing things that you've gone through in your life and all the difficult things you've gone through in your life and how you've got to where you are today.
I'm super stoked to be on the podcast. When I first came across you on Chloe and Elodie's podcast, I was like, oh, I wonder if like he'll have me on. And then like we ended up connecting. You're like, oh, I was going to message you anyway. I was like, oh, no way. So it worked out.
Yeah, it's very organic. Like you said, we kind of both connected on socials. And then literally the week after we connected, one of my favorite podcasts out there is Listenable with Dill Alcott and Angus McLaughlin, and they had the next week after I sort of looked around your Instagram and saw you had such a unique story, you popped up on their podcast. And that's one of my favorite podcasts because I think it's so important that we learn about the disability community and have a better inclusivity with all people. And that's obviously what Good Humans is all about, trying to be the best humans we can be on this planet. And I heard your story and I was like, far out, I need to get her on my pod. And here we are. So I guess let's go back to the start. Tell me about your childhood and growing up over in beautiful New Zealand.
Yeah, so I was born in Christchurch, New Zealand, which is in the South Island of New Zealand. And I was born with an extremely rare neurological disorder called Mobius syndrome. And basically what that means is it's facial paralysis. So my sixth and seventh cranial nerves don't work. So that means my eyebrows don't work, my eyes don't track from left to right, and my upper lip doesn't move, which means I can't smile. And I also like to refer to it as free Botox because it's essentially just free Botox, really. It's super rare. It only affects one in every 3 to 4 million. I think there's only a handful of us, like maybe three or four of us in New Zealand at the moment. And because of that syndrome, I was also born with bilateral telekies or clubbed feet, which is what enabled me to be a Paralympic athlete, which I'm sure we'll get into in a bit. But basically, I was born with my feet being up and touching the insides of my knees. And because of that, I've come to plasters and had a couple of operations before the age of about two and a half. And basically the outcome of that was having little to no ankle movement and no calf muscles, which is what enabled me to be a Paralympic athlete. So yeah, that was sort of like very early childhood. And then at 3 and a half, I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. So I've been a diabetic for like 21 years now, because I just turned 24 in September. And that obviously had its challenges, but technology is so amazing now. Like, I can literally have my blood glucose levels on my phone, and like my phone will alert me when I'm going low or high. And now I'm on this new pump that if I'm going low, it will like completely stop the insulin without telling me. And if I'm going high, it will deliver insulin for me. Like, I literally don't, sometimes I forget I have, like, that I'm a diabetic. That's how like crazy technology is. So very grateful to live in a country where medicine and technology is so easily accessible, because I know it's not like that around the world. But yeah, so that was very early childhood for me, and grew up in a really awesome family, mum and dad and a younger sister. Moved around the country a bit, moved from Christchurch when I was about 8, then moved to Wellington, and then lived there for 2 years, moved to Tauranga, lived there for like 6 years, and then I've been up in Auckland since the age of 16. So yeah.
It's a busy life. So obviously living with a disability, and a disability like yours as well, that is so visually not obvious. I don't want to like come off mean, but you said, we spoke before and you said you don't get offended by anything, which is great. But no. Because I know what school's like. It's hard on the best of on the easiest of days for people with any kid has a tough time at school at some stages. But I can imagine, and hearing you speak on other podcasts and chatting to you this morning, you told me how difficult school was for you at times. Can you give us a bit of a rundown on what? Let's go primary school or like early school first, because I can imagine younger kids. Bit different bullying once compared to once you get to a bit older. So what was early school life like?
Early school life, I don't remember like too much of like the real early years, like 5 or 6, but kind of as I got a bit older, I can't like pinpoint when exactly I knew, but I kind of just sort of realizing that I was a bit different. I didn't know really in what way until I started getting called out on the fact that like I couldn't smile or righty righty rah, because I think my parents, like, I'm very grateful to have the parents I have, because they've never treated me any differently. They've just told me to go after my dreams and do whatever, and you'll be all good. but they never told me that. Well, I don't know, it's hard to put into words, but they didn't make a point of the fact that I couldn't smile. They were just like, oh, this is the syndrome that you have. And you know, that I, you know, kids would say, oh, why aren't you smiling, or why is your face like that, or why, like, do you look sad all the time? And I think it definitely was a lot more noticeable when I was younger. Probably because I'm used to it, but I don't think it's as noticeable now. Like, people still pick up on it, but I think, yeah, when I was younger, it was a lot more noticeable. So kids, you know, kids being kids, they would like name call and say I was ugly or whatever. And then as I got older and moved around a bit, you know, starting new schools is always hard for any kid. Doesn't matter what age you are or what you've got, quote unquote, wrong with you. It's always going to be hard. But for me, it was a little bit more harder because, obviously with not being able to smile and make like emotions on my face, people probably just thought I was a bitch all the time, which I'm not a bitch, just want to put it out there. I'm very friendly. But people probably didn't like want to ask, or they just made assumptions, which is fine, like people will do what they've got to do. But you know, as I got older, it turned into more physical bullying. So like around the age, actually, we can backtrack to the operation. Do you want to chat about that?
Yeah, let's go back there. Whatever you think the story needs to be told.
So I had, so obviously growing up, I was bullied and told that I was ugly or whatever. And so I really struggled fitting in. And I really wanted to fit in. I think, you know, any kid wants to be liked and have friends and want to be the center of attention. And so around the age of 11, 12, I was given an operation that was supposed to be able to make me smile. And this operation was like so intense. Like it was around eight and a half hours long. They took tissue from my right thigh and inserted it internally in the sides of my face, so that the idea would be that when I clenched down, the corners of my mouth would turn up to mimic a smile. And you know, it was completely my choice. Even though like I was underage, my parents gave me full control. They were like, you can decide whether you want the surgery or not. And of course, going through everything I'd been through up until that point and being like sat in a surgeon's office and being told that this is a smile operation, you know, I was like, oh my God, of course I want to smile, because then I would be liked, because I always associated not being liked as the reason to why I couldn't smile, if that makes sense. Like I always associated like not being able to smile as the reason why I wasn't liked, sorry. And so I got the operation, and sometimes I look at pictures after, and I'm sure you can like scroll down my Instagram and I can send you some pictures to put with the visuals, Cooper. Like my face was so incredibly swollen, like literally looked like a pufferfish, and there was bruising all over. Like I literally just looked like I'd been beat into a pole. And so not only did I have to go back to school looking like that, the surgery was unsuccessful, and my swelling didn't go down for a good year. So I also had to start a new school looking like a pufferfish and with like bruises all over me. So starting a new school, not being able to smile, and also looking like you've been beaten, like is not a great recipe to making friends and being accepted. So that was super hard. And then... yeah, kind of, this was kind of when shit started hitting the fan, for lack of a better term. And yeah, just, yeah, so year seven, again, got name called, didn't have any friends, was literally live monitor, would sit outside by myself at lunch and just sit there the whole lunchtime. Just, I don't even know what I'd do, to be honest. I don't really even remember. Year eight, I made a few friends, but then other people would tell that group of friends not to be friends with me, and so then I'd have to go make new friends. And I remember telling my teachers one time that, you know, this was happening, and the following day I was cornered in a bathroom and like had my head smashed against the bathroom mirror and told that if I was to tell teachers again, then it would be like I'd get hurt worse. So I learned pretty quickly not to tell anyone about what I was going through, which included my parents. And then, yeah, so started getting pushed down hills, got my bags ripped off my back, lunchbox would get ripped out of my backpack, would get, so like when I'd be walking upstairs, I'd get my knees kicked in from behind. And so like I'd get grazes on my knees and everything, and I'd just tell mum that I tripped over or whatever in PE class or whatever. And then around the age of 13 or 14 is when I first experienced sexual assault and rape, and was experienced that between the ages of like 14 to 16, and was also exposed to porn from a really young age as well. And so porn mixed with like the sexual assault and rape really affected my relationships with other people as I was growing up, which isn't always great. And when you're being called a slut for something you didn't want to do in the first place, it like knocks your confidence quite a bit as well. And so when you're already lacking confidence because of something you can't change in terms of my smile, and then having all of that, it's like it was like quite a lot. And I don't really know, like people ask me how I got through it, and I was like, you know what, I actually don't know sometimes. But yeah, moved up to Auckland at age of 16, and kind of like was, like I was saying to you earlier, Cooper, I was exhausted all the time, like wasn't sleeping properly, you know, just like was honestly exhausted all the time. Didn't matter how much sleep I could get, I was always so tired. I looked at photos of myself and I was so pale, which is scary to think about. And then kind of fast forward to my last year of school, so 18, and It's kind of when things again started hitting the fan, and I experienced like some dizziness and like disorientation at the start of that year. And then a few months later, I had a really big seizure and collapse and was taken into hospital, got all these tests done, like MRIs, ECGs, CT scans, like the works, and they couldn't find anything. And so they discharged me the following day. And then a couple of weeks later, I had another seizure and a collapse, and they took me in again, and still nothing was wrong. And then a couple of weeks after that second one, I started collapsing more often, so like every other day or maybe twice on one day, and then like a 3-day gap and then another two or whatever. And then by the time of about October, I want to say, of that year, I was having up to 8 or 9 seizures and collapsing a day, and so I was in and out of hospital for a good year, well, most of that year, and then going into 2016, they couldn't figure out what it was. And then I was finally diagnosed with extreme clinical depression and anxiety with post-traumatic stress disorder and dissociative attacks, which is what the collapsing and seizures were. And basically what was happening is my brain was under so much stress and pressure from not only the depression and anxiety, but also the trauma that I'd been through growing up, that my brain was shutting down. So I'm lucky to be alive in that sense. So yeah, that's sort of like my life growing up.
I mean, first of all, thank you so much for sharing. It's really special the way that you can talk about your experience now, and
so many
people get so much out of listening to your story that are going through terrible situations themselves. And hopefully there's some kids who are bullies out there who listen and realize the impact that it can have. One thing I want to touch on, looking back through school, what sort of support did you have, or what sort of lack of support do you think you had? Do you think there was a lack of support in the way of, say, psychologists after you had your first suicide attempt? Was there working with psychologists with your parents, or was it quite a private and scary thing to go through alone?
Oh, it was 100% private. Like I said, you know, I learned the hard way not to tell teachers about my bullying and stuff, and I lied to my parents so much. Like, I never told them anything that I was going through because I was so scared, because like kids would also say that my parents didn't love me, or that I was a mistake, and that my parents didn't want me or whatever. And so when you are already in a vulnerable state and you're also super young, have believed it, I did, because these people were my peers. And even though they were horrible to me, I still believed everything they told me that I was, or that they said about me. So I never told my parents about anything that I was going through, and it wasn't until I had my seizures that like my mum and dad kind of figured out what had happened. And you know, throughout the like recovery journey and recovery period, I slowly told them things about what had happened and stuff, but I don't think I'll ever tell them fully, like 100% everything that happened to me, because I don't want them to think it was their fault, because I could not live with that. Like, there's nothing that they could have done. Like, I made the decision at the end of the day not to tell them, and whether that was through fault of my own or through believing other people, I just made that decision. So if they didn't know, then they don't need to know now, but they're so supportive of me. They know like how open I am now with what I'm going through, and so the support's there now, but the support definitely wasn't there when I was going through all of it.
Yeah, obviously such a trooper to still be here and being able to share your story and inspire others and have the confidence now to share your story is a really special thing. You touched on before when we were having a chat what happened your second last year of school. Can you talk me through that situation, because that's something that nobody should ever have to go through, but also something that I think kind of sets up for post-school.
Yeah, so I got into, so when I was, this was when I was living in Auckland, and, you know, like I wagged school quite a bit because, like in my last couple of years, because like I just, like I had no, like when I say I had no will to live, like, I literally just did not want to be alive. Like every single day I'd wake up and I'd think, holy shit, why am I still here? And so I would kind of like just coast through school. Like my grades were so shit. And so, you know, I'd know people, but I wouldn't have like actual friend groups. So like I'd go from friend group to friend group or whatever. Anyway, at the end of, near the end of my second to last year at school, I got involved with a group of people that, unbeknown to me at the time, because I'm probably a bit oblivious and naive, they were into drugs and stuff, and they were probably doing this before I even noticed. But one lunchtime, I just remembered I was sitting around having lunch, and they just pulled out weed and started smoking it, and I was like, oh, that's not a bit of me. I'm just going to exit and carry on with my day. And nothing happened that day. They were cool with it. They didn't think anything of it. But the following day I was in class and I got called into the principal's office, and I knew, like, I'm not sure what it was, but I knew exactly what I was going to that principal office for. I was like, holy shit, like, I don't know what's going to happen. Like, my parents are going to kill me. And I got into the office and she was like, the principal was like, have you been smoking weed? And I was like, no, I promise I haven't. I haven't. Like, I'm so sorry. It wasn't me. I promise. And she was like, oh, no, I know. It wasn't you. We know it was your friends. And I was like, oh, okay. And she was like, now you can either get it. Like, this was pretty much blackmail. Let's call it for what it is. But she was like, you can either get expelled or you can essentially rat on your friends and they'll get expelled. And like, that put me in such a like morally hard situation, because like, I would never want to get someone else in trouble. Like, I'm not sure how many people would, to be fair. But in that situation, I was honestly thinking, like, do I bring more attention to myself and what I'm going through, or do I continue to escape and get the easy route and get other people in trouble? And like, I sat with it for like ages, and I finally told the principal that it was the friends and who it was, and the following day they got expelled. And like, I felt so shit about it. And then the following day after that, so it's now Friday now, and this first happened on the Tuesday, and the stress that was running through my body, honestly, let me tell you, I was so stressed. I'm walking out of school and I'm about to walk out of one exit, and I don't know what it was, but something told me to go out the other exit. So I was like, I can't go out the other exit. Anyway, I get out the other exit, I look up the road to where the other exit is that I would have been walking out of, and there were three guys in gang jackets just standing there, and I was like, oh shit, like, this is what's about to happen. Anyway, I go to my desk, get on my desk, the principal calls me, and she's like, Taylor, are you okay, where are you? And I was like, yeah, I'm fine, I'm on the bus going home. And she was like, are you safe, are you hurt, like, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, I'm fine, why? And she goes, there are people looking for you with knives. And I was like, oh, okay, thank God I didn't go out that exit. So, yeah, that was pretty crazy.
And that was because those friends had, they got expelled.
Yeah.
Them. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It was crazy. Yeah. Craziest, probably, like, out of everything I've been through, I'd put that up there in the top three craziest experiences of my life. Like, the adrenaline that was running through my body when I knew exactly what they were doing there. I knew they were related to the girls that, like, I was, like, friends with. And, like, honestly, you know when you get that, like choke in your throat, like, when you're about to, like, vomit or, like, cry or something, or there's so much adrenaline going through your body? That's what I felt, and I was like, oh, my God. Yeah.
How did the situation de-escalate? Did the school, like, speak to them?
I didn't. I'm not entirely sure what happened with, like, the gang members and everything. But the situation didn't really de-escalate at all. The kind of rumours started going around the school and everything. And, like, the rumours were right, because I did rat on my friends, but, like, they had, like, you know how people just, like, add fuel to the fire and, like, create more, like, add more to the story that isn't true. And so then I sort of, like, isolated again the following year, because apparently I was the girl that, like, told on people, which wasn't the case at all. But, like, I mean, I had more going on that year that I needed to worry about other than what rumors were going around the school.
Yeah, and it's like you said, your health problems came from all this overload of stress and anxiety and depression that you've been having for so long. So, and then,
and you know what, when you put it that way, I reckon I was probably holding on by a very thin thread for a very long time, and I reckon that situation probably is what kind of just started escalating the health problems in terms of the, like, seizures and everything, because I'd been really bad mentally for, like, a long period of time. Like, I'm not talking 2 or 3 years, I'm talking, like, at least 8 or 9 years. And so the fact that I was able to hold on for that long is insane, but I definitely think that situation is what sent me over the edge.
Yeah, it's wild how difficult your upbringing was, and just that you're here today and that you're sharing your story. Like I said, I'll keep saying it all podcasts. It's an unbelievable story that you're still here fighting, and you have the, I was going to say the smile on your face today. That's probably not the right term to use, but the amazing zest for life.
I do, though. I do have a smile on my face.
But like your zest for life and your personality just oozes happiness and confidence. And it's so sad to think that it wasn't there for so long and had to be hidden behind the cruelness of bullying of school. So let's talk about when you finished school. Or well, you said you got kicked out of school. I think this is another thing. You got kicked out of school because you're having... So let's talk about that stage of your life from getting kicked out of school. You can explain why, but then from going to see a psychologist, getting help, we'll say in speech bubbles, and what sort of advice they gave you, and what sort of, I'm super intrigued by someone who's had such a difficult story like yours. What was the initial advice from a psychologist and from working with somebody?
So I got kicked out of school, and I'm quite proud of that. I wouldn't suggest it to anyone, but like I do like to say that I was kicked out of school. But basically I was kicked out of school because of the seizures that I was having, and like their reasoning was that I was a risk to other students by having the seizures, which is so backwards. And now that I think about it, it like sort of makes me a little bit angry, but at the same time, like, I definitely think I needed to not be at school. So like very happy that it happened, couldn't care less at the time because I hated school. But yeah, so kind of was kicked out of school. And a couple of weeks later, I started going in and out of hospital for, I want to say, at least a good year. And then the following year, like I said, in 2016, I was diagnosed with extreme clinical depression, anxiety with post-traumatic stress disorder, and then the dissociative attacks. When I was initially diagnosed in like March of 2016, I was immediately put on some sort of medication. Couldn't tell you what it is. I've completely forgotten. I was on it for 2 weeks, and those 2 weeks were wild. I ended up taking, like, I do not recommend this at all if you are put on medication, but I took myself off my medication by myself and never touched them again, because the hallucinations and just, it was crazy. Like those 2 weeks, just, I don't know what was happening, but I was probably worse than when I went on to medication. So I went off medication and was put into intensive therapy for a good year, like up to 3 therapy sessions a week for a good period of time. Talked through a lot of the stuff, which really helped. And then sort of did therapy on and off after that year for another year and a bit, but then I said I didn't need therapy anymore, that I was fine doing it on my own. And at the end of my last, like in the lead up to my last few therapy sessions, the therapist told me that I was never going to fully recover in terms of my seizures and collapses that I was having, because my brain was still under so much stress, and that it would never get rid of the stress, and that I was always going to be dependent on my parents, and that I was never going to be able to drive again, and I was never going to do this, never going to do this, never going to do that. And I was like, holy shit, that's a lot to take in when you're just about turning 20 and like you're supposed to be starting like the best years of your life, and you're being told that you're never going to have full independence again. And so at first I did listen to it, and I was like, shit, I'm going to be just a blog at home for the rest of my life. And then kind of sat with it for a couple of weeks, and I sort of just realized, because at this time I was like watching a lot of like inspirational videos on YouTube and stuff, and like reading things here and there, and I sort of just realized that, and it came back to like that quote I told you about earlier, like the quote, if you think you can, or if you think you can't, you're right. And I sort of sat with that for a bit, and I was like, wow, like that's so true. And even though I'm being told that I can't do all these things by a medical professional, it's up to me, if that makes sense. So I started the journey of like self-help, and when I say I worked my ass off for like at least a solid year. Like I'm telling you, day in, day out, it did not matter what I was feeling on that day, whether I was in tears, whether I was exhausted, whether I felt like I couldn't go on. Like I got up and I did the work, and I did the work every single day because I just knew that if I continued doing it and if I made it a habit, like everything else, it would get easier. Like I had made a habit of thinking in such a negative way that I was so good at it. And I was like, okay, well, if I flip that and if I make a habit of like thinking positively and thinking positive things about myself and my life and what I can do and what I can't do, then it will become a habit and I'll be good at it. And I hadn't read anything at that point about that, but something inside me was just like, okay, if you go with this and run with it, it will work. And it did work.
Yeah. Speaking of doing the work and putting in the hours every day, what kind of things were you doing? Because I think there will definitely be out the people out there listening who feel so lost. And I mean, I can't imagine there's many that have had as difficult as a situation upbringing as you, but for somebody who's out there quite lost and thinking like there's no real light out of the tunnel, what kind of things were you doing and what were the most helpful things for you, especially after being told by medical professionals you're not going to be able to go on a date without your parents there, you're not going to be able to do anything, and look at you now, like we'll get to where you're at now, but what sort of things did you do to help yourself and to get yourself out of that dire situation?
Well, it's funny you ask, because you know how you've got the 1% good club?
Yes.
It was sort of just like that for me, just 1% every day. And like when I say I did not miss a day, I did not miss a day. It didn't matter if it was my birthday, didn't matter if it was someone else's birthday, didn't matter if it was the weekend, like I did something. Like it literally started as small as just going for a 20-minute walk every day. Like that's all it was. It honestly just started as me doing a 20-minute walk every single day without fail. And as time went on, I added more things. So maybe turning up to like a 30-minute walk or 40-minute walk each day, and then also adding in making sure I drink at least 3 liters of water a day. So that's two things on my checklist. And then once I felt really good and solid in that, I added another thing. So maybe it was like reading one page of my book or two pages of my book, because like I was still recovering from like a pretty bad spout of mental health, and so like I was still getting like quite tired easily. So I was like, okay, I can't rush this at all, like I've got to be really sensible about this. And I think having like an athlete background as well, like in terms of like the discipline, I think any athlete will know that when you're an athlete from a young age, discipline is like, it's pretty hard to not have when you're an athlete. So I think discipline really played a huge part in that as well. And just as time went on, I added more, and coming to today, like the things that I like have in my 1% club, which is probably now like a 95% club, like I get up at like 10 to 6, I do a 15-minute HIIT workout, I go for my walk along the beach, a 3K walk along the beach. I come back, have my breakfast, do my like actual workout, which is anywhere from like 25 minutes to 40 minutes. And then I do a meditation. I do gratitude work. Like my day is like literally filled with little things throughout the day that I know that even if something goes wrong, I'll still be okay, because I have those fundamental blocks that are just there. And I know that they're there, and I know that they're going to help me no matter what, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Your maturity and self-awareness around the topic is second to none, and it's unbelievable. Especially from being told that you're going to be struggling forever, basically, by a psychologist. It baffles me that is the answer sometimes. Well, not the answer, much, but that is the answer that you give to it under the age of 20 year old girl, that's your life. And for you to come up with,
I'm probably going just on 20,
for you to have the maturity and the self-awareness to start adding those things, and to have the understanding that it's not going to happen in a day, it's not going to happen in a week, it might take a year, it might take 2 years, it might take 5 years, but if I'm always getting better, habit stacking is a really good book called Atomic Habits by James Clear, about just adding a new little habit on top of another one, and you can build the life that you want around you if you start taking little steps in the right direction.
To put it into perspective, I've been on this like self-help journey for 4 years now. Like I'm 24 and I started this journey around probably just going on 20, maybe just after, so it hasn't happened overnight, and I've probably seen the most progress in the last year to year and a half. And I just never gave up, like, and I'll continue to not give up, and I'll continue to add things to my day where I see fit or where I think something needs to be added. But again, I think it just comes down to one, never giving up, and two, having the belief that it doesn't matter what is thrown your way, you can get through anything. And if I think I'm living proof of that, and if I can do it, then I think anyone can do it. And like, I don't want to toot my own horn at all, and I hate like being so like, oh, if I can do it, anyone can do it. But I'm not special at all. Like, yeah, I've been through some shit stuff in my life, and I shouldn't be alive, and all this sort of stuff, but like, I just did it. There's no magic recipe. I just did it and put in the work, and
No, it's so beautiful, your story, to see where you're at now, and the mindset that you carry is so inspirational. And I know so many people get a lot out of it. You touched briefly on sport and being an athlete and discipline. Let's talk about your sporting career, because there's some pretty cool stuff that you've done.
Yeah. So I was a swimmer, a Paralympic swimmer from the age of about 10 or 11, and kind of was exposed to professional sport around the age of, I want to say 14, like, so I was super young. And I think that's the benefit of being a Paralympic athlete. You can get into being a professional athlete at a young age and carry it throughout your life to quite a older age compared to like able-bodied athletes. Anyway, so I was a swimmer for since the age of 10 or 11, competed for New Zealand, got to wear the silver fern on my chest, which is always such an honour. I think my biggest competition was the Pan Pacific Games over in LA in 2014. Bearing in mind, I was still like, this 2014 was probably pretty much near the peak of how bad my mental health got. So sometimes I look back and I was like, what were you doing?
Yeah, how are you juggling that?
You were one crazy woman. I don't know. I'm to be fair, I was pretty good at like hiding what I was going through and like just putting on a brave face and being like, everything was okay. But like, I'd be in training sometimes, like, thank God for goggles. Like, all I'm saying is thank God for goggles, because I would be bawling my eyes out in the middle of training, like, my goggles would be filled with tears, and I'd be like, I can't see, I don't know where the wall is, but I'll be fine. But yeah, got really good at hiding it. Anyway, had to quit swimming beginning of 2017 due to all the therapy that I was in and everything. And then end of 2017, I got asked to come and give shot put a go. So turned up to the athletics track, got a shot put, and the guy literally just standing there, and he was like, just throw it like you're in primary school. And I was like, you do realize I just stood at the front of the circle and chucked it? And he's like, yeah, just do it. And I was like, okay, all good, here we go. So I stood at the front of the circle and just gave it a good throw. I was like, oh well, whatever happens, happens, right? So threw it, and he like looked at me and looked down at the shot put and looked back at me, and he was like, oh. And then he got on his phone and started texting people. I was like, listen, I'm really struggling with my anxiety right now. I need some info. What's happening up in that brain of yours? Let me know. Verbalize what you're doing, because I'm about to shit my pants. Anyway, he got on his phone, and a couple of minutes later, two other people came over, and he was like, okay, throw it again. And I was like, well, there's a bit more pressure now. Like three more people. Okay, so stood up on the circle and did it again. They measured it, and he was like, you've just broken the New Zealand record in your classification. And I was like, oh, okay, that's nice. Like, okay, didn't think too much of it, was just like, okay. And then he was like, okay, when can we get you in for a training session? And I was like, well, I'm not doing much apart from therapy at the moment, so whenever. And so we met up a couple of days later, and he like gave me a training session and everything. And then the next week had a training session. And on that next training session, he was like, oh, by the way, you're going to Melbourne in February to compete with the New Zealand team. I was like, no, I'm not. Like, there is no way you're getting me on that plane. And anyway, ended up going, so this was February of 2018, competed at the Victoria State Champ. Bearing in mind, I've never competed a day in my life in shot put, anything outside of swimming, I've never done before. So I rocked up to this finals competition, there were like at least 20 competitors competing there, which was actually super cool to be able to like to meet heaps of people and be a bit outside of my comfort zone. Anyway, did my three throws and started taking my shoes off because I was like, there's no way I made the top eight. Anyway, they were like, oh, Taylor, keep your shoes on, you made the top eight. And I was like, I don't want to be here any longer than I need to be. And they're like, you made the top eight, so put your shoes back on. I was like, okay. So I put my shoes back on, did my last three throws, and then I was like, sweet, I'm all done. Go put my other shoes back on and off I go. And they were calling out the names from eighth to first, and my name wasn't an eight. And I was like, oh my God, I've been disqualified. I was like, I've literally been disqualified. How embarrassing. And I was standing around like trying not to make eye contact with anyone because I was so embarrassed. I thought I'd been disqualified. Anyway, they get to four and my name still hadn't been called out. And I was like, I've for sure been disqualified. Anyway, they call out third and second and I was the only person left. And I was like, someone is messing with me right now. Anyway, they call out my name in first and they're like, yo, Taylor, you got first. And I was like, shit, like how, like, are you sure? Like, can you check it please? Because I don't want to get up to that podium and get a medal that isn't mine. Anyway, they checked it and they're like, yeah, you won. And I was like, oh my God, okay. So they take me over to the medal ceremony and everything. And they were like, they called out my name for first. And then they were like, and Taylor's also just become world number one in her classification. And I was like, oh, okay, this is where it's going now. Like, this is great. but yeah, so that was a pretty crazy couple of months. And then all the 27 team trained full time along with doing therapy still. Beginning of 2018, had the New Zealand National Championships, had a really shit time with training, changed coaches 2 weeks out from the competition and everything, which again sent my anxiety into like an absolute flurry. Like when I tell you, I was like overthinking everything and like having mental breakdowns the front and center, like I looked up and I was like, wow, you need to chill out, Taylor. but yeah, rocked up to nationals and literally had the mindset of, well, there's nothing else I can do now, just got to do it. So did my throws and everything and ended up not only qualifying for Worlds, but breaking the world record in my classification. And then a couple of weeks after that, I got injured and couldn't go to Worlds and then made the decision a couple of months later to quit just due to the injury and also some other internal stuff, politics and everything. And like I was saying to you earlier, I like 100% value my well-being both mentally and physically and everything else over any medal or record or world number one or whatever. And I've been pretty happy with that decision ever since. And yeah,
it's such a crazy story. That hearing that story is just baffling, how obviously talented you are, but yeah, it's just wild to hear that story on how quick you became so successful in shot put and in your division. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I also like the way that you put your mental health and your well-being over being an athlete, because I mean, looking back, this is kind of something when I was listening to that, do you think maybe with swimming and with shot put and sport, it did give you that little bit of purpose that kept you kind of, you know what I mean? If you didn't have those, yeah, do you think you'd be in a harder spot than you were? I mean, not that it was an easy spot you're in, but
let's put it this way, if I didn't have swimming, because when I was swimming I was going through like the guts of my mental health stuff, and like while I was swimming I had all of my 6 suicide attempts. But if I didn't have swimming, I don't want to say I know this for sure, but I really don't think I would be alive if I didn't have that sport background. I'm not sure why, I couldn't tell you why I think that. It's just like a gut feeling that I have. But being an athlete has taught me so much, and I don't think I will ever leave. Like, I probably train harder now. Like, I write my own program stuff. I probably train harder now than I did ever when I was being like a professional athlete, which is crazy. But I think now versus back then, I have that drive to want to better myself. And being like athletic now and training now, I don't do it for my physical health at all. Like, the physical benefits are amazing, but being able to get through like a tough training session helps me mentally more than anything, because it's like, okay, if I can get through that and if I can push my body beyond what I think it can, then mentally I can do anything as well.
Yeah, it's such a beautiful mindset you've got. And like I said, your story to where you are now is so, so amazing. And it's so beautiful to be able to have this conversation with you. let's move to the last little segment. Let's go to where you're at now. What's the plans coming up this year? What do you see your next couple of years being? Obviously, the world we're living in is changing so quickly, but I can see how passionate you are to try and help other people who are going through difficult situations. So what's the future vision for Taylor?
Well, I really only started taking like my presence on social media seriously in like the last, like when I say seriously, I mean like really pushing like the messages that I want to push for like the last year. And like I've grown a pretty good community so far, so we'd really love to be able to keep that going. I'm already working with such incredible brands and would love to be able to continue that. I've got some really cool media opportunities coming up, which I've chatted to you about a little bit. And I am someone that if I'm not 100% committed to something, then I won't do it at all. But I know for sure that this is what I'm supposed to be doing, like talking about mental health and sharing my story with others. As much as I really don't enjoy talking about myself at all, and I get like so like cringed out when I hear myself talking about myself like on podcasts and stuff. And but I know that this is what I'm supposed to be doing, and again, I couldn't tell you how I know. I just had this gut feeling and this drive to continuing bettering other people's lives through my own story, and the responses that I get from people when I share my story is just like unbelievable. Like it really blows my mind just how much people can get from my story, and like it's such an honor to be able to come on podcasts like yours and chat to communities that are so passionate about mental health and share my own story with mental health. And so you're just continuing to do that, hoping like once the borders open here in New Zealand, I'll be able to come over to Australia again. And yeah, just I've got some big goals, and I'm hoping I'll be able to hit them soon. And I guess when I know, you'll know.
I'm excited to see the journey, because obviously you've come such a long way, and with the mindset and drive that you've obviously got now, it's going to be really exciting to see where you can go. And very excited, I guess, to announce, we chatted before, but to have you on as a Good Human Factory ambassador, first overseas ambassador, I think. I'm going to have a look. But no, it's
how exciting. Go New Zealand.
Go New Zealand. I do have a lot of great New Zealand friends. So yeah, I just think your story is so important to share, but also can inspire so many people who are in that place of losing hope, because there's so many stories you hear time and time again where just by hearing a story that inspires someone can really change somebody's perspective and change somebody's mindset on, not that they have it worse or I've got it better or worse, like we're all on our different journey, and the advice that you get sometimes isn't always the right advice, and you're the perfect example of that with your advice that you got from the medical industry. So I think the more we can have conversations in mental health and look at it from more than the one dimensional go and get help, get offered something, that's the solution, I think we can learn from other people's stories so much, be inspired by, and just understand that, like you said, if you think you can or you think you can't, you're right. So that's really awesome to have this chat. But the last question I always love to ask everybody on Good Humans podcast is, what does being a good human mean to Taylor Clement?
Now I want to be 100% honest and say I have thought my answer, because I've listened to your podcast with Till and Chloe and like Harry and all the people, and I was like, okay, I need to think of a good one. But it came to me pretty easily, actually. And I think being a good human to me means having no judgment at all when it comes to yourself or others. I think this world that we live in, especially accelerated, don't get me wrong, I love social media, and I will always say that I love social media. I think it's like Instagram, TikTok, I think they're all incredible platforms to push these messages that we're talking about. But I think there's a lot of judgment that is accelerated by social media, and I think there's so many amazing people out there that we're missing out on just simply by judging a book by its cover. So for me, being a good human is living without judgment of ourselves and others, and just being kind to one another. Smile at people. I forget I can't smile sometimes, and I'll be walking down the road and I'll smile at someone, and half the time I don't even think they realize, just because like I just do it. And I think just be kind to one another.
Love that. Even just a smile energy. I'm sure you walk past people, even if they might not be able to visually see a smile. Like I can just talking to you and spending a couple hours chatting to you today, from the hour here on this podcast to earlier today having a chat, your personality, and I'm sure people listening to the podcast will know that you're smiling the whole time because such a great energy and such a great zest for life, considering the situations you've had to go through in life. I think you should be really proud, and I'm so grateful and humbled to be able to have this chat with you, and excited to see what we can do together with the Good Human Factory, because I know I'm inspired as hell by your story, and I'm sure other people will be too, and can't wait to continue to grow and share that story as we move on as through our lives.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much. That's Taylor Clemen, everyone.
This has been a Wellbeing Network podcast.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.